Hello and welcome to the sixth episode of On the Pod, my lord. I'm James Rushton. As usual, I'm joined by both Ellie Sanford and Adam Clark. How are you both doing, guys?
Good, mate. Good. How are you?
I'm all good, man. I bet you're better, Ellis.
Yeah. Aside from the post-Euros hangover, all is good.
And Adam, how are you doing yourself, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything like Ellis to boast about in the the particular English national sense, but, you know, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, there's no better segue than that, is there? How was Wales's summer for you?
Weather aside, our summer has been beautiful on the football pitch, at least. Anyway,
I mean, who could have expected that? Who?
Man, it still hasn't fully sunk in just what we achieved, even though we didn't get to the final. We surpassed our expectations, and it was just brilliant. It captured the nation, and loving it, not gonna lie.
And Adam, how's yours, mate, for England?
Yeah, not great. You know, another disappointing summer tournament, really. You know, it's just a lot of the problems had looked like they'd been fixed, and now it looks like those problems have not been fixed at all.
Yeah, I stopped watching England properly when I bawled my eyes out in 2006 when I went out to Portugal. And I've never watched them fully, firmly ever since. I think it was 2008 that was the real kicker, actually, after 2006. It's like you're having your heart kicked around the pitch. But, the Euros were a pretty solid tournament. They're getting a lot of flack for how defensive the football was. But there were some real surprises there. And, man, I'm so excited to have Ellis on it to speak about Wales because, Jesus, I still can't get over it. I mean, Gareth Bale, arguably one of the world's best footballers, you'd expect something, but maybe not a semi-final, potentially a final appearance, but amazing. It's a shame there's no third-place playoff, really. So Wales could really have cemented a foothold on that tournament. But I'm really excited to see what they can do in the future. Man, you must be so happy.
Do you know what I love, though? Gareth Bale, top five players on the planet, potentially. He wasn't even our best player, which just goes to show we're not a one-man team, like everyone was saying, coming into the tournament.
Who was your best player?
Aaron Ramsey, I reckon, which probably didn't help our cause in the semi-final because we lacked that creative midfielder and Portugal just had one up on us that day.
Yeah, it's a shame. Portugal, eventual winners of the tournament. Mm. Defensive football, they say, Adam, but it won on the tournament.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think that's, in a way, people remember the great moments from tournaments and they forget, you know, how dull some matches are. It's just the nature of knockout tournaments. Is that lots of teams are going to go out there and be defensive. I mean, you know, the fact that Portugal didn't manage to beat anyone, you know, in 90 minutes for what was it, like the last four or five games of that tournament?
Yeah, yeah.
Is a little bit disappointing, obviously. On the other hand, you know, I think it goes to show with what Ellis was talking about, you know, teamwork, and that's what defence is really all about. That's about structure. That's about knowing where your teammates are. Teamwork won the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we do talk about passion and determination and grit a lot, but there's no better football sight than Cristiano Ronaldo. We were proper, you know, pretty much a career-threatening injury, maybe. We don't know yet. But he was on the sideline screaming at the players in the place of the manager. He was dictating who would take the free kicks. You know, that's incredible. And from a player some may consider to be so selfish and so self-centred, that was incredible to see. Amazing. And it, you know, may have galvanised the entire team.
I mean, I just want to say, the way he was up and moving on that sideline, I don't think it was a career-threatening injury.
Photo made me quite sick. That reminded me of Luke Nillis, if you guys remember that.
I'm pretty sure that was photoshopped.
You reckon?
Because that photo made it look like it was his ankle that was twisted the wrong way, not his knee. So I'm
fair enough.
Skeptical.
There were some pretty good comments that, you know, if you take something in slow motion at its absolute worst moment and then put a big red circle around it, yeah,
it's going to look bad.
It's
going to
look bad. I mean, I think, James, you're looking for a little bit of the clickbait title there.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. But hey, consider his age, 31. Maybe it's time to call it. Who knows? I've just got to really dig myself out this hole I've created.
Bloody hell. I feel James Rushton calls for Cristiano Ronaldo to quit the game.
He's made enough money. He's won the tournament. He's done everything he possibly can, I feel. Maybe a World Cup next year in two years if they do what they did. They stole the tournament. Amazing. They did a Greece.
I mean, this might be taking the football kind of hipster purism too far, but there is surely a pretty big metaphor in, you know, arguably the biggest name player in the world, you know, the player who is routinely accused of, you know, all the play throws through him, and, you know, that's to the detriment of his side, him going off injured and his side grinding out, you know, a structural victory over a team of very talented individuals who couldn't seem to break down, you know, a team who were playing just really well as a group.
I mean, we see it too often. I mean, we saw it with Leicester. A team beats the individual talent, and like as you said, this is perfect just juxtaposition, because you've got the very embodiment of the self-centred player in the team that eventually won the tournament through playing, you know, grinding out that result. It's mind-blowing. I don't think we expected that when we previewed the tournament last episode, Adam.
We did
not.
Bloody
hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I said...
So
we did not.
Is there anyone? Can either of us take any plaudits from our predictions? I don't think so. I think I did predict. Did we both predict France in the final? I'm pretty sure I did.
I think we predicted England to be close. I don't think we predicted Wales to do so well. We said get out of the group, I believe, and I said Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland would escape their groups. And
you did. You were high on Northern Ireland.
That's a good call.
Yeah, and man, I should have placed a bet. I feel. Really should have, but they both got thoroughly their asses kicked firmly once they got through. But
I think there's probably a decent segue into Aston Villa there. Kieran Clarke possibly responsible for some of the Republic of Ireland's struggles.
Possibly.
Oh bloody hell!
Not possibly.
More than possibly.
Definitely.
Still a very immature player. I feel he's you know, he's quite talented. He's quite a solid footballer, but he does go so far over his head. He sees red. He gets a red mist. How I'd put it, and it leads to him running out of position, causing wild tackles that sometimes do work out, but I don't. He needs to sort that out, really.
Yeah, at the risk of angering our fan base, you know, we all remember that that slide tackle that he did where he ran out to the halfway line. Can't remember who it was against, but he caused, you know, Leicester. Made the other player cartwheel.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Jeffrey Schlupp. Done a full backflip, didn't I?
And we loved it, but it was him trying to do that same kind of tackle. Out on the wing against
Eden Hazard, who is no Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No chance.
He missed it entirely. And obviously, you know, that opened them up for the counter-attack and the goal.
Ellis, how do you feel about Kieran?
I like the bloke, firstly.
I think that's all we can say, really.
The Tim Sherwood school of opinion, top bloke.
But, good lad.
Yeah, he needs a more experienced defender beside him to say, dude, rein it in. So Tommy Elphick, theoretically, could be useful.
Ooh,
in...
Boom, talking of experienced defenders. Look at Ellis pulling out the segues there.
Man, that's an incredible one. Tommy Elphick can really galvanise Villa's defence. I mean, whoever he's playing with surely will have their head screwed on, even if it's someone as senior as Julian Lescott. Less said about him, the better, I feel. But yeah, Juve is won by Portugal, arguably the best team came in second place. But yeah, man, there's another big tournament this summer, Adam, and you're the expert on it. Go ahead, Copa America
there
time.
Was indeed. The Copa Centenario has just finished. So we've got all sorts of segues here, because we can talk about... Firstly, let's talk quickly about Villa players. So Carlos Sanchez, Villa's other international representative, sent off for Colombia. in their, I can't quite remember if it's their quarterfinal or their semi-final match.
Yeah, I think it was a quarter. It was a semi because Jack Grimsey and us interviewed.
Was it a third place playoff? Actually,
I don't know.
No, I'm featured in third place. It was definitely the competitive rounds that he got sent off. Obviously, not the proudest of days for him either. But overall, I was very happy because Chile won the Copa America. For those who don't know, I'm a big fan of Chile. I've spent some time out there, English teaching. And they are my adopted second national side and a much more successful one than England, I have to say. Because this was their second Copa America in 2 years.
Amazing, isn't it? It really is.
It is.
Incredible stuff.
Arguably, they've just ended Lionel Messi's international career, possibly. Because after a 0-0 and a Chile win on penalties, which was again a result of the same result as last year's Copa America, Messi declared that he was done with the Argentinian national side, and that was going to be it for him. He was no longer going to try and compete after three finals, three lost finals. What do we feel about that?
Yeah, I think the backstory is that the Argentine FA are a bit of a mess, and I don't think our Lionel, he wants to be a poster boy for them anymore. So he's just called it a day. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But there's better people with more knowledge about the Argentine FA than I do saying the same thing. So, yeah, Lionel's called it quits, hasn't he? He's done.
He's probably got more on his mind, you know, like the whole criminal proceedings.
Like stealing money.
Yeah. Excuse me, we are all Lionel Messi.
That was a horrible, horrible campaign. And I've got a Barcelona shirt. I've been to the stadium a few times, and I've been to a few matches. And that club has got such a great, you know, public image, and it's all for the people. And this can't be further against that image.
This literally
cannot.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, after Lionel Messi was convicted of something like 200 million euros of tax fraud.
It was a lot of money.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And a prison sentence that he is almost certainly never going to serve. Barcelona launched the hashtag on Twitter, "We are all Lionel Messi," leading many people to consider whether they were indeed the world's best football player and a tax cheat. most people come to the conclusion that they were not.
But yeah, like, how do you even have the cojones to do that? It's incredible. I mean, Lionel Messi's crime, on a scale of crimes, it's obviously not so bad. He didn't cause harm to anyone except, you know, the wallet of Spain itself. It's a bad crime. Tax evasion, you know, it's something to be frowned upon heavily, especially by those who are privileged, like Lionel Messi is. He has worked hard to get where he is, but it doesn't mean you can, you know, fiddle with money. But yeah, you can't come out and say something like that. You can't... We aren't rich, we aren't privileged, we don't have the adoration of, you know, the world soccer fans. Bloody hell, how out of touch do you have to be? Incredible.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. I think that may have led a few more people to be fonder of Chile's victory in the Copa America than they would otherwise be. Generally, there have been a bit of a surge of, you know, very disappointing for Messi, obviously, probably almost certainly acknowledged as the world's best player. But his problem is that he may never be acknowledged as the best ever so long as he can't win an international tournament with his team, unlike Maradona or Pele. And there have been some pretty pointed criticisms from Maradona and from other Argentinians back home. But a great achievement by Chile. And again, another side that is really kind of proving the value of a team ethic.
Yeah, man. I don't know if it's whether you can't believe it or not, but you wouldn't expect Chile to be among these footballing superpowers of South America. Personally, from me anyway, you'd expect it to be Colombia, Argentina, Brazil. I don't think, you know, Chile would come fourth, not first, especially with the North American involvement in this tournament as well.
Yeah, I mean, not at all. I mean, it's really, you know, they are working off once-in-a-generation talent. You know, okay, Alexis Sanchez and Arturo Vidal, you know, are bona fide world stars. But at the same time, they've got a whole bunch of players who are not QPR fans, or if anyone was paying attention while QPR were in the Premier League, boom, Eduardo Vargas and Mauricio Isla. Those are two players who briefly featured for QPR under Harry Redknapp. Look like nothing, but for the Chilean national side, they've been integral parts of a great international side over the years, and we're going to see a very interesting clash. I was just looking this up. There will be this in 2018, the Artemio Franchi Trophy. Does anyone know what this is?
No,
literally no.
Not at all. No idea. Okay, this is a tournament that will be held between the winners of the Copa America and the Euros. Also including the runners-up of those two tournaments. And it has only ever been held twice before, in 1985 and in 1993.
So someone might say some kind of World Cup.
You might, yeah, absolutely. More cynical might say a cynical money grab. But either way...
The Confederations Cup is pretty much that.
But it will be interesting to see. So you're going to see Chile... Chile will play initially against the losing runners-up of the Euros, France, and Argentina will play against the winners of the Euros, Portugal, and then the winners of those respective matches will play each other. And it'll be very interesting to see because Chile and Argentina were playing quite similar styles in this tournament. They both played this kind of high-pressing, counter-attacking style, whereas the European teams, obviously Portugal played this slightly defensive teamwork game, and yeah, France were playing this
defensive.
Yeah, slightly. Well, do you have we'll see. I mean, and then France were playing, you know, obviously trying to get all the talents of, you know, all their ridiculously talented generation for them in.
Amazing stuff. Well, I mean, Copa America, someone who featured heavily was Brad Guzan. Pretty much someone who is a very Jekyll and Hyde player for the American squad. He seems like a very talented goalkeeper on occasion. But for Aston Villa, he's a pretty poor performer.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's always had his moments. And I think he had a fairly solid Copa America, I think. I mean, I didn't watch any of it, but I didn't hear that he was particularly awful. And I feel like I probably would have if he did. But you've got to imagine with the new keeper, his time at Villa's done. Which is
yeah, he pretty much just got buried by Messi. That was it. You know, everyone does, except yeah, Chile.
You can't really hold that against him, can you? Because it's Messi at the end of the day.
But yeah, going forward, man. Sorry, Adam, did you want to say something about Bradley?
I was just going to say, it's interesting. I mean, you said that, you know, this is probably the end for him with our new keeper. I'm going to try it here. Pierluigi Gollini?
Yes.
Pierluigi Gollini?
Or if you've seen Aaron Tischbowler's Snapchat, where he calls him Luigi and Gollini responds with an eloquent fuck off, which is pretty incredible. Yeah, Pierluigi Gollini. Signed from Hellas Verona for a pretty cheap fee. I will say that, pretty cheap fee.
That was actually what I was going to pick up on. Pierluigi Gollini signed for 4.1 million from Hellas Verona in Italy. Not that I just looked that one up. You know what? To me, that doesn't smack of a instant kind of you're straight in the first team. That sounds like a competition pick to me. That sounds like a, all right, we've got one young keeper who's got everything to prove. We've got one old keeper who needs to keep his spot. Let's see which one of them stakes the claim.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. That's what I want. I don't want there to be any defined starter. If Joe Bennett, say, for example, is better than Jordan Amavi, he's not. But if he is, why he should be our left back.
Two goal Joe Bennett.
Amazing. Bloody hell. He actually scored three free kicks. One in training, then two in the match.
What a time to be alive. They were good for each
Joe Bennett,
though. You got to say.
Good for him. But yeah, Pierluigi Gollini, yeah, smacks of a kind of a depth pick, but hey, his talent ceiling's there. Who says that he can go on to be our starter if he's not already?
But if he's not, and Brad Guzan sticks around, where does that leave Mark Byrne and Jed Steer? Because I can't see Mark Byrne going anywhere, because he seems to be like a positive player in the dressing room. And for a third-choice keeper, that's all you really need. But
yeah.
Sure, like he didn't play badly last season, and personally I'd rather see him than Guzan stick around.
Yeah, the issue is who would want Brad Guzan apart from the MLS teams who may not come in for him.
I hear the Chinese are always after random Premier League players.
Graziano Pelle being one of them, signed to a massive deal, third highest player paid player in the world or something like that. Crazy. Brad, you know, Brad, your calling's there, mate, if you want to make some bank. Please do. Please take that offer straight away and go. Get out of Dodge. But yeah, moving on to someone who's a massive influence in the main part of our podcast, I feel. Stan Petrov's back. How incredible.
It's astounding. Fair play. Like, you just never have expected it. And it's just great to see him looking. It's great to see him healthy and then great to see him looking as good as he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is our Stan the Man Petrov podcast. Our tribute to the man, because I think it's too early really to predict how the squad's going to shape up. You know, transfer window's only just started, we haven't seen what everyone's happening, but we can say that Stan is back, and that's just a huge boost. It's a huge boost to the club. I think it's a huge boost to the dressing room. I mean, James, you want to pick up on what do you think it means for the club? What do you think it means for the fans to see him back?
It means, genuinely, it does make me quite tearful. I mean, this is incredible. This is amazing. You know, this story is going quite under the waters as well. You know, not many people are picking up on this, you know, especially in the international media. But a player has come back from retirement age, my ad. He was about 34 when he, you know, was diagnosed with leukemia, cancer of the blood. You know, he was 34. He was coming to the end of his career. He had quite a traumatic battle with the cancer. Beat it. Went to coach at Villa. Stopped coaching at Villa because then he wanted to come back and play for Aston Villa. It means so much that someone would want to do that for Villa, right now especially.
Yeah, and I mean, coming from a guy that's, he's not even like a hometown player, so there's no Gabby Abong Lahore type links, but the fact that he wants to play for us and he felt that connection with the club, just infinite respect for the guy.
Yeah, he can do no wrong. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think it will. I'm not a guy who normally believes in the kind of, you know, grit, heart, determination narrative of how good a football team is. But I can certainly be sold on the fact that the Villa dressing room in last season and the toxic presence of certain players. And, you know, I'm going to say Gabby, you know, I'm not going to stick back on this one. I'm going to say, I think it was Gabby. You know, I think Jolene Lescott's actions towards the fans didn't help. I think Micah Richards, you know, he obviously didn't provide the leadership that we all hoped he would. And seeing Petrov come back into it, I think that will have a real tangible effect. We needed something to kind of pick this club up and, you know, and talk about changing the mentality around the club. He's done it. In a single stroke, he's done it.
He wouldn't even have to be in the training squad to have done it, just to have come out with the press conference like he did back in April and say, I want to play for Villa. That would have done it. But, you know, his presence in the dressing room, it might be a bleach on all this toxicity. It might get rid of it, genuinely. It might inspire people like Michael Richards, even Gabby Abonlawar, to know that, A, Gabby's old pal is back. You know, his best mate is back in the squad after beating leukemia. Might get his head screwed on. And see, it might just think, you know, ground everyone at Villa, really bring them back to, you know, back on their feet, realise what the game's all about. And it is about stuff like this, you know, not, you know, of course, not every player comes back, you know, amazing comeback like this. But it's certainly what we want our game to be about. It's about stuff like this, these living legends. You know, we've had Olof Melberg, Martin Larsson, we had Petrov in that same team and Carew. Those guys cemented their place in Villa history forever. And what to want for one of them to come back after all this?
It's amazing. You know,
words can't describe it. I don't think I'm doing a good enough job of saying, you know, expressing my emotions about this. They're all over the place, but it is incredible.
Yeah, and I'm going to be slightly realistic. You know, a 37-year-old guy who's just recovered from leukemia, he will not be. I'm just going to say this now. He's not going to be the star man. You know, he's not the player who is going to be, you know, our top player this year. I doubt that he will even really be I certainly don't think he'll be a regular starter. I wonder to what extent, you know, he'll even be a sub. But his presence in the squad, in terms of leadership, and in the championship, I think this is something that you can kind of get away with having in the squad and that can be a big benefit in the squad. Will be a huge boost.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no way he was ever going to do 90 minutes 46 times a season, because most players would struggle to do that, even the ones that haven't had to battle such illnesses. But like you said, just him being there will surely be a lift. And I mean, looking at this squad compared to the squad we had last summer, there just seems to be a different level of level-headedness to last season, which I think would be useful this season.
Yeah, I mean, his presence is so massive to the club. He will be just as important of a performer off the pitch as on it. I mean, Stan Petrov's game was never about being the star man. It was never about being a dynamic number 10 or even like a holding midfielder. He was just there. He was just played his role solidly. My story with Stan that I can refer to most is when he first joined, he was pretty below par when he first started playing for Villa under Martin O'Neill. He brought him from Celtic. I used to go to Villa Park with a lady called Diane, who was Villa through and through, and she hated Petrov. You know, there was no instance of what we know now. There was no... He kind of strolled around the pitch. He'd always be out of position. He'd get caught out when he didn't need to be. Eventually, that involved into someone who was always in the right place at the right time. Breaking point for Petrov with us was when he actually come to blows with Olof Melberg on the pitch. And for, you know, Villa fans, we all know you don't disrespect Olof Melberg. you don't do it.
Just the beard.
Yeah, Stan Petrov did that in front of Villa Park, who hated him at the time. Who not hated him, but they were wasn't a positive influence. No one really loved him. And he came to blows with Malberg on the pitch. He got booed off. He threw his shirt on the ground. Ever since that day, he was a different player. And then eventually he scores a cracker at Derby. We all know that goal. And yeah, man, Stan Petrov, Villa legend, surely. There is no other. There is no higher, I feel. Even the team that may have won the European Cup, even Paul McGrath, even players like Carew Lawson and Malberg, there is no higher than Stan Petrov for me.
Yeah, our editor, Robert Lintott, he wrote a piece a couple of years back called Why Does Cillian Petrov Matter? I totally advise you to go search that out, and hopefully we can link it in the article that goes up with the podcast. And it captures quite a lot that was great about him. So I'm just going to call out some of the Twitter stuff that he got when he asked for people to describe him. And he got some people saying, heart of the whole, he was a true leader of men. Another one, Kyle Dixon, 95, who said Petrov was dependable, consistent and classy. Another guy who said he was not always the best player, but always a great leader. I think that gives you a great flavour. He was the guy who, when we were good, and let's not forget, there were a couple of seasons where we really were good, where it really looked like we were going to break into Champions League. He was the guy who not only always looked like he gave it his all and was always a dependable performer, he was the guy who you never really felt wanted to leave. There were some players who you thought, you know what, someone's going to come for him. Ashley Young, you thought, someone's going to come for this guy eventually. You know, there are others as well. I think James Milner, we always knew, you know, there was a point where he was smacking in so many goals and putting in such great performances that you just thought, okay, someone's going to come in for him. No one was ever going to come in for Petrov. You know, Man City did not want Cillian Petrov. Manchester United did not want Cillian Petrov. But we wanted him because we knew that every single game he was going to play his best. And he was going to will himself to play his best.
Yeah, it's he really does escape definition. I mean, you wouldn't pick him, you know, out of the world's best footballers, the world's best team. If you were to make your 11, you wouldn't pick him. But if he was on the other team, he'd prove you wrong. You know, I firmly believe he could have fit into any team on the world. Give him time and he'd be the rock of any team. He's just that guy. He really is. I mean, I remember playing, stupid as it sounds, I remember playing games like Football Manager 2006 and Barcelona would always come in for Cillian Petrov and you'd scoff at the idea. But, you know, really thinking about it, teams need people like Stan Petrov. Every single football team should have a guy like Stan Petrov to be that bedrock.
I mean, every team seems to have one, but I can't think of many that do it better than Stan. And I think that's really what he is. He's just a really resolute player, both on and off the pitch. Like, when he was still at Celtic, I think this was just after he signed for Celtic. I'm not entirely sure if this is true, but I do hope it's true, because this story's bloody brilliant.
I know what you're going to say, and it is true.
That makes it even better. But he was basically struggling to fit in, was homesick, didn't know much English, so started working in his mate's burger van to pick up the language. And can you imagine any other Premier League footballer doing that in today's day and age? You just wouldn't, would you?
No, and that was a must have been pretty rough for him in a Scottish burger van. I mean, bloody hell. If you can't even speak English as well. But yes, yeah, Celtic fans adore Petrov. He was a dynamic attacking midfielder for them. And do you guys remember any of his time at Celtic?
Vaguely. Like, Celtic were my second club back in the day. So FIFA 2005 kind of era. I do vaguely remember him, and he scored quite a few goals.
Yeah, he was pretty bloody fantastic for Celtic. I don't feel like he actually recaptured that form for Villa, but he was in a very different way. He was a very different player at Aston Villa. Extremely.
It can't hurt that, you know, quality of opposition, Premier League versus Scottish Premier League. So he's always going to be different and less attack minded, but no less effective.
Yeah, he really did have his way with the Scottish Premiership. And comes to England, and I mean, could you have expected this? You know, fall in love with someone like Stan Petrov. He's a really unfashionable footballer. He's not the loudest voice, but stories are coming out about this guy, and it's amazing. I mean, Jack Grealish said the other day, when he was 15, 13 on the pitch, Stan Petrov would come onto the kids' pitch and just kick him, just, you know, lay the boot into him. And Grealish would be, you know, getting red teary eyes and going, why are you doing this? And Petrov would go up to him and go, well, it's a compliment. If people are kicking you, that's a compliment. I'm kicking you because there's no other way for me, Stan, to stop you, Jack, running around, you know, rings around me.
Yeah, and in a way, it's the shocking and what's so great about Petrov's story is it doesn't really fit into the narratives that people look for. You know, narratives, people look for the homegrown lad. You don't look for the guy who's just come in from Bulgaria, you know, from north of the border playing at Celtic to become the hometown hero. And you know,
you don't look at a dumpy, quite unfit, aging Bulgarian to be this kind of player. Stan Petrov's never been he doesn't look like the model professional, but he embodies that. He is number one in the world for me. Professional footballer, the embodiment. If he had a bit more talent, who bloody knows what he could have gone on to do with this attitude. But man, beating leukemia and coming back to potentially play first team football in the championship and beyond for Aston Villa. I mean, who knows where this story actually ends?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think part of it as well is that we've had so few of those figures in the club over the last couple of years. You know, everyone who you hoped might turn into that solid, dependable figure just was never there. You know, we obviously, you know, we all know that Gabby has not been all that we hoped that he would be as a hometown boy. Mika Richards hasn't come in this year and done it.
Yeah.
You know, there are other players as well who over the years, you know, Richard Dunn, James Collins, those kind of players who were, you know, good men on the field, you know, did their jobs, but they didn't take that kind of role in the club which you kind of make stories about. You know, the kind of guy that you want to tell fans of other teams, hey, you haven't heard of this guy, but this is why I support Villa. This is why he's so great.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one Stan Petrov, and man, he plays for Aston Villa. How cool. How cool is that? We've got that story. We've got that narrative. And man, seeing Stylian Petrov lead the team out at Villa Park, because he will be captain, surely. There is no way, unless Alfie gets it, who, you know, exemplary player, gets it. But man, seeing Stan Petrov walk out onto Villa Park 6 years or so after I last witnessed him play, you still can't expect it. It feels like I'm making it up, to be completely honest. But yeah, Ellis, where does Stan Petrov come for you? Number one, surely?
Yeah, you can't put anyone above him. There's great players, and there's players that are right at the top of my list of best Villa players ever, and then they stand above them just because of his attitude and what he's been through and how he's come back from it. Like, you've got your Melbergs and your Larsons, who are both amazing and otherwise would be top, but you can't top Stan.
No. What about yourself, Adam?
Yeah, and I think the key is, you know, Villa player. Is he the best player who's come through Villa? No. But he's the player who came through Villa and decided, you know, this was a club where he was going to help make his name. Now, obviously, he did that at other clubs as well, Celtic and CSK Sofia. But, you know, I think the fact that he's coming back to us, you know, it makes him a legend. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Stan Petrov, I mean, that Bergvan story really does sell him. He said to his kids, when he was turning out for a Sunday league team in Sutton Coldfield, he said to his kids, you'll see me playing for Villa one day. And this guy had come back from leukemia. He wasn't looking well. He was quite overweight after, you know, enjoying himself, after, you know, giving the all clear, the remission, the cancellation of no more leukemia, no more cancer of the blood. Nothing's wrong with you, Stan. You're free, you know, to live out the rest of your life without having to worry about all of that. He turns around to his kids and goes, yeah, you're going to see me playing for Aston Villa again. This will be the perfect example of showing my kids how to achieve their dreams. And he's going to do it. He's a contract signing away from doing it. And I've got to believe that Villa will be offering him a contract. He did not look out of place, albeit against, you know, a sixth division Austrian team. He didn't look out of place in the Villa side.
I think there's no reason for Villa to not offer him a contract. I mean, you've seen a few years ago, Stoke offered Michael Owen a sort of low wage but pay as you play kind of deal. There's no reason we can't do that for Stan, and I can't see any reason to not do it. And if we did, it would just be it would just be a PR nightmare. So I'm just not saying that's the only reason why we should, because goddamn, he deserves it. But there's absolutely no reason why Villa should not offer him a contract. If I said that
right, you feel, Adam? Yeah, yeah. You're I feel Adam's more grounded to the realities of football than both of us. So this will be a real final say on the matter, I feel, about contracts.
I see no reason not to give. I think, as I said, in the championship, you can afford to have a player who perhaps you're not thinking is your 90-minute man, but he's there to provide leadership. I think he also fits in quite well with the signing of Tommy Elphick, who's the signing of another player who perhaps, you know, obviously that he's been offloaded by Bournemouth. They've decided that he's not quite Premier League quality, but in terms of what he could do on the pitch, in terms of the leadership qualities he could provide, and in terms of how direly Villa need that right now, he's going to be a valuable buy. I think Petrov fits into that scheme, that he changes the atmosphere around the club, he changes the narrative, and that's when you start slotting players in around them.
Yeah, I mean, Stylian Petrov, I feel he can do a job for Villa as long as he wants to, and as long as he's able to. He's coming up to 40, that possibly means there's around 3 years left in the tank, realistically. If Villa are to stay in the championship, there's no reason that he can see those 3 years out of Villa. And even make some bit part appearances in the Premier League to close a match.
We've got to get back there first.
Yeah, we have to get back there first. But man, I have no doubt that we will soon. Fingers crossed. But yeah, we've got a new leader, as if we needed one with Tommy Elphick. But yeah, Stan Petrov is back, and I for one can't be any more pleased.
Same. Got that sums it up pretty perfectly. Stan's the man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like we've come to an end there then, a natural end. Stan Petrov is back, beat leukemia. For anyone who knows anything to do with leukemia, it's as with all cancers, it's horrible. It's among the worst you can have. The worst being pancreatic cancer, which is, you know, absolutely devastating to a body. But the way cancer works is it latches on, it uses your body as a sort of London Underground network around to affect all the organs. When it's in the blood, the very train that travels through that underground network, it can be devastating. And for Stan to not only beat that, to go back to a job coaching with Villa and then to play for Villa, it's a story for the ages. And I'm blessed to be alive when this is happening. This is something that my granddad would tell me about when he saw Cruyff at Villa Park against Barcelona and stuff like that. It really is an amazing time to be a Villa fan right now. And yeah, any final thoughts on Stan, you guys?
Just looking forward to a new season and seeing him back in the team. And, you know, if anyone... You know, I think it'll be a reason for people to come back to Villa Park. That's a huge thing. You know, it's a reason for fans to come back to the stadium, to feel that the club, you know, is more than just, you know, a losing money machine that we've felt in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, what about yourself, Ellis? Are you going back down to Villa Park to witness a return?
I'm going to be very selfish and say I hope he doesn't make a first team appearance until I get back to Birmingham in September, because I really want to be in Villa Park and watch him like lead the team out. But just seeing him back will be tremendous.
Yeah, I've always been worried that he might get booed, but then again, he has earned the right to be booed. This is what he wants. He doesn't, you know, he's earned that right. That's all he wanted, to earn that right to be loved or booed or whatever. But I don't think there's anyone who can find a negative with Stan, even if he falls on his arse and the ball rolls through his legs past a flailing Brad Guzan, hopefully not, into the goal. But yeah, guys, Stan's back. What more can we say? Amazing stuff. I feel like it's time to end it there. What, do you guys agree?
Perfect.
Absolutely. Been a pleasure.
Perfect. Stan Petrov's back. For all those of you who don't know, he beat cancer. He's back. And he's going to play for Aston Villa, and I can't stop saying that because I can barely believe it. But yeah, thanks again for listening to episode 6 of On the Pod, my lord. Myself, Ellis and Adam will be back shortly, within the next 3 or 4 weeks, I believe, to speak about a season preview for Aston Villa, I believe. Things are kind of wrapping up we'll be wrapping up with the pre-season by the time we get to August. So yeah, perfect time to sum up what Villa have done in the transfer market, and maybe a bit more on Petrov, see how he's developing. But yeah, from me, from Ellis, from Adam, it's bye. Thank you very much for listening.